You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Some of the characters in the short stories Deborah Eisenberg has published over the past quarter century are privileged white people in cities or suburbs, academics, artists, actors, collectors who live in enviable apartments and travel to Europe. Others are poor and rural, just getting by. All have their troubles, separations and divorces, work that sometimes seems meaningless, intractable conflicts with their children, and later they have to face the fear and disillusionment that followed the attacks of September 11th. The collected stories of Deborah Eisenberg, which is published by Picador, brings Deborah Eisenberg back to our show today. It's always a pleasure to see you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Your stories often focus on people's thoughts and perceptions, and action is almost secondary, although there is action. Is the desire to get inside other people's heads what got you writing in the first place?
Huh. Well, it never occurred to me to wonder, but sometimes I feel that I am inside other people's heads. Or at least I am inside the imagined head of somebody. And I suppose that I do have a drive to reveal that to other people, to say, oh, look at that person's head. Look what's inside of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have written a play at one point, and I've often talked to actors who also write about the similarity between being an actor and being a writer, in that you get to be anybody you want to be, and your characters could be children, men, women, gay people, straight people, and in each one of them, I mean, you are each one of those.
Yes, it's a very, very fascinating thing, this matter of having been given a specific body, a specific time of life, a specific set of circumstances, and one sort of takes it for granted that one belongs entirely to those circumstances. But in fact, the mind is much, much more fluid, and experience is much, much more fluid.
Well, here you have a collection that brings together four earlier published collections. And in looking at them, were you, I'm sure you went over all of these stories. I don't know whether you change any of the stories when you republish them. But did you think, gee, I've changed a lot? Or isn't it amazing how consistent I've been about people?
To tell you the truth, I didn't actually reread them. When I'm finished with something, it loses its interest to me. I've done the exploration.
So what do you do with the reading? When you're doing readings, you still have to go over them again and
definitely,
again?
Definitely, definitely. But they are very, very... each one is rather a shock to me, I find. I mean, I was glancing at the book last night, just sort of glancing at it, and I can't understand how those things came to be in those pages.
You mean you don't recognize yourself as the creator of some of these stories?
Exactly.
Now, when we say that, are we talking about these characters or the way you use language, which is something that is very specific to your stories?
Yes, it is specific to my stories, I think. Although the diction does change quite a bit, not only from book to book, but also from story to story. But the whole world of each one surprises me. I think, why did I elect to immerse myself in that particular world and in that type of diction? You mentioned earlier that actors and writers have this common experience of being free to be other people. But sometimes it's almost like a sort of affliction. You think, well, why would I have done that?
Your earliest stories are about young people. The latest stories are about middle-aged people. And
yes.
Then you have Revenge of the Dinosaurs, about a very old woman who has had a stroke. Other than reflecting your own aging process, has your approach to writing changed over the years?
I think it's, well, my ambitions naturally keep expanding, and I keep wanting to do things that are more complex, more penetrating, more exploratory. Other than that, I don't really know.
And also playing with the form.
Yes.
A lot of reviewers talk about how you're almost experimental, even though you're not an experimental writer.
That's a strange fact, yes.
Now, is that something that you've done consciously?
No, but, you know, language seems so inflexible when one begins to try to apply it to something. And so I suppose really I would describe what I do in the course of a day is just try to make it yield to the inexpressible.
Because obviously you're not one of those people who believes in writing what you know.
Who knows what you know?
You, in fact, in the story called What It Was Like Seeing Chris, the narrator thinks every moment is all the things that have happened before and all the things that are going to happen, and every moment is just the way all those things look at one point on their way along a line.
You know, the second story I ever wrote, and that is almost a sort of micro-manifesto, I realize.
Mm-hmm. In fact, a number of characters have similar insights.
Yes.
So this is an insight that you had as a writer or as somebody who's just living your life?
Oh, just as a human on the planet.
It also seems you could start a story at any point, and it doesn't really matter when you start it because you still have all the past and all the future.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, the whole notion of a beginning and an end seems very limited to me. It doesn't really express or reflect the way things actually occur.
Well, is that easier to pull off in the short story form?
I rather imagine it is, because you don't need, this is speaking generally, of course, but generally the length of a novel requires a kind of propulsive sort of, device or an armature that arches from here to there. I think you're freer with a shorter form, as you are with a lyric poem, as opposed to, you know, a great epic poem, to move out at the sides of an occurrence.
My guest is Deborah Eisenberg, who's the Collected Stories of Deborah Eisenberg has just been released as a Picador paperback original. I want to congratulate you for winning the prize that everybody wants to win, the MacArthur.
I was flabbergasted.
Well, but that really, I'm sure, frees you to even write, even frees you more. Like so many writers, you also teach.
Yes.
And you've been teaching at the University of Virginia, although I think of you as the quintessential New Yorker, so I wonder about that. Do you commute to Charlottesville?
You know, the trip is taxing, so I pretty much stay there during the semester I'm there.
Do you think that gives you a different kind of an insight, seeing the world from that very different area? You know, I mean, we're talking about middle Virginia, aren't we? But it's a lot closer to the South. It's far enough away from Washington to not be in the center of things.
Yes, I'm not sure, really, because when I'm at home, I frequently spend my time in my own apartment.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I ask again is your characters tend not to think about world issues unless they're forced to. For instance, in Under the 82nd Airborne, an American actress goes to visit her daughter in Honduras and finds herself close to what appears to be the country war in Nicaragua, which she knows nothing about.
Absolutely. And
do you think most people live their lives oblivious to what's going on in the rest of the world unless they're forced to?
I think most Americans do. I think most Americans are protected by a thick wall of privilege for those who are on one side of the divide, and also propaganda. And I feel that our job internationally is not to think about our position in the world or what goes on in the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously you don't feel that way about yourself.
Well, I think it's a matter of desperate importance to try to learn as much as you can about what goes on in the rest of the world and in our own country, the parts of it that remain behind closed doors to some of us.
Have you ever written a novel?
I have never done so.
But you do, in a couple of cases, return to characters, or am I just assuming something? Charlie, the woman who dies relatively young in the Twilight of the Superheroes, is she the same young woman named Charlie in the earlier story, Flotsam?
Nope, it was just a recycling of a name.
Totally
different. I've never used the same character twice.
And many short story writers do, because it's a way of returning to something that they have left hanging.
Absolutely,
themselves.
Absolutely.
But that hasn't happened for you.
No. I think that I'd gladly press former characters into service again if I happen to find a place where they fit. It would be nice not to have to just make a whole new cast each time.
The short story is such a specialized form with some pretty great masters, Chekhov, Dora Welty, Flannery O'Connor, more recently Alice Munro. Do you have any particular favorites?
Well, many, including those you mentioned.
I left out John Cheever.
Cheever. Phenomenal. Mavis Gallant, mm-hmm. Great, great writer. Isaac Babel. Really, the list is extensive.
And do you feel like there are any there that you have a certain kinship to?
Well, there are so many there I wish I had a certain kinship to.
You've written one play, Pastoral, which was produced in 1982. That's a long time ago.
Long time ago.
How was it received?
It was received weirdly well. It looked as though it was just a complete mistake. And I think the night of the dress rehearsal was possibly, well, it was one of the worst nights of my life. And my entire body was numb for many hours after that dress rehearsal. And I thought, well, isn't this amazing? I've just written many pages of nonsense, and a number of people have really wasted months on trying to make it work. And the next night, it just unfolded like a little blossom. And it was just lovely, and it was very, very well received, to my complete amazement.
But you've never been tempted to write another play?
No, I live with a playwright. That's, you know, the strains are horrible. Really horrible.
Well, the thing about writing a story is you write the story. The only collaborator you have after that is your reader.
That's correct.
And you write a play or a screenplay, whatever, and your collaborators are the director, the actors, the set designer.
Yes.
The audience is just one of many collaborators.
That's exactly right. And, of course, it's thrilling. There's nothing as exciting. But it's also terrifying if you like to be completely in charge of the experience of your, well, interlocutor, so to speak, or your reader.
Well, the answer, of course, is to write the play and then direct it and then perform it.
Right. And
Wally has done that.
Bronze it, yes.
The Collected Stories of Deborah Eisenberg, now available in a Picador paperback original, all of the stories published in four previous volumes.
That's correct.
And nothing
yes.
unpublished, nothing new?
No, no.
But will we see a new book from you soon?
Certainly not soon.
Well, I look forward to speaking to you whenever it comes out.
Thank you so much, Lenny. Great to be here.